and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
Pull up some dust and sit down.
And now, the host of the longest running fight show in radio and internet history.
I am deeply sorry for my irresponsible and selfish behavior I engaged in.
Pedro Fernandez.
My advice to you, start drinking heavily.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sports Byline Broadcast Network and Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Yes, the man was correct in that lofty introduction, as my name is Pedro Fernandez, at least that's what it says on my driver's license. Of course, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, 35, make that 36 plus years now, often imitated but never duplicated. Straight up, we're talking combat sports, I mean MMA and boxing for the next 2 hours live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius, XM, Satellite Radio, and like 1,000 other platforms. Straight up, this is your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. The Godfather, the retired HBO Godfather, Mr. Larry Merchant will join me in a few minutes. Of course, I'm going to get on Larry as far as history is concerned and maybe just open up some of that mind to his. I mean, he's got so much wisdom and so much knowledge. I throw darts at him. They're questions, but I throw them like darts at him, and he just comes back with responses. So the Godfather's in rare form, as he is always, and he will be here in a few minutes. Of course, I'm talking about the great Larry Merchant. Open phone lines all around the planet. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, there's also the guilt-free, no-commitment text line. The number, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. We are live on the Sports Byline USA channel, of course, on Twitch.tv. That's Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline channel. Of course, we're going live. And after this break, I will take my face off the TV channel and put on Ali Frazier 3 for this first hour. That will be the televised portion of Ring Talk Live Worldwide today. So if you like to watch Ali Frazier 3 at the same time, the thrill in Manila, and listen to the show, you can by going to twitch.tv and the Sports Byline USA channel. Scott Cuddy is the producer. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right. The World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
You know, just excited to be back. I wish we could do a fight every night. You know me, Pedro.
Fellas, I'm ready to get up and do my thing.
Go ahead.
I want to get into it, man, you know. Go ahead. Like a sex machine, man.
Check it. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Time to bring in the HBO, the retired HBO Godfather himself. We'll talk about Mr. Larry Merchant. Larry, very good Sunday morning to you, sir.
Same to you, Pedro, and all your listeners.
Okay, and I'm going to play some controversial audio here in a couple of minutes about Muhammad Ali back in 1964. And somebody said to me, he's just out of his mind. He's racist. He's racist against white people and all that kind of good stuff. Roll that tape, Cuddy.
You look so...
I don't like his arrogance. I think...
You don't like...
No, because... No, sir. No.
You look like a nigger talking like this. The white people.
Oh, I beg your pardon. No.
I don't want to, all black people don't cut up what you're saying. You mean white people know. Listen, woman, everybody black watching this show knows why you don't like the way I talk. You look like a nigger talking to you like this. Niggas never done nothing like this.
Sir,
before.
I beg your
I know
your,
what it
I
is. Don't tell
your,
me what you don't
I
like.
I beg your
you don't
I'm
know who
telling
you're talking
you
to.
What I don't like.
You know, I don't care what you don't like. Just buy a ticket and see me get my butt whooped.
No. Listen, I'm in a minority in this country here.
What's your minority? What
I'm
you?
From England.
You're a minority. You're from England. You own England and America. You white. You can go anywhere in this city you want to go. Oh, you from England. You more freer than me. You from England. Didn't you say you're a minority? You know you can go to towns, move in neighborhoods. You can buy things over. You can open a business downtown Chicago and do business. And I can't do it, but you from England. Now, you got some nerve to come over and be mad at me because I'm proud and I want to fight and be confident and get my people to be proud and fight and do. We the minority, too. We've been a minority for 400 years, and you freer than me. You from England.
No,
you are freer than me, and everybody know you. How many of you white people here truly believe that she's not as free as me or any black man? She can open up a shop downtown. He can't even rent a store. You can. Don't compare yourself with no black man.
Okay. You want to talk about that? Let me get something. I'm sorry.
You got to be out your mind, lady.
She's a woman, though. Which...
Whatever she is, she's a white woman, and she's in a white society. I'm not getting on that. The woman is more free of all black people in Chicago.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, I know about it. You're a hypocrite. You say, thank you.
What's the point you want?
Larry, I think the funniest thing in that whole thing there, the only comedy, was when the woman from England says she was a minority. I started chuckling.
Well, she was an immigrant, so maybe she felt that she was in a strange country. And certainly being confronted by Ali, who was ahead of his time in using the media to talk about racism at a time when it was very rarely spoken like that.
You know, it's funny. I remember I remember, my memory serves me correctly. He and Jim Brown and a whole bunch of black athletes got together, and when they started to take away the championship, or they threatened to take away the championship from Muhammad Ali back in 1967 or 68, and these black athletes came together. Bill Russell was one of them. I think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was another. And Jim Brown, of course. Jim Brown.
Right. That was the group.
Yeah, that was the group. They how can I put this? I don't see those type of athletes today. In other words, we've got things going on here in this country, and you've got athletes that refuse to speak up. I mean, Mike Trout says he won't play, maybe because of baseball, because of the coronavirus, but as far as social issues...
Please, Pedro, there are more black athletes speaking up, kneeling, standing up, putting slogans on their jerseys that reflect the common mood than ever before. I don't know what you're talking about. Now, there may not be an Ali, because Ali was one of a kind at that time. But I disagree with you. I mean, united in some way doesn't mean every black athlete has to make political statements. What I gather is that there will be plenty of them who are making statements. And it's a different world than the world of Ali. That's more than half a century ago.
Good point. Are you surprised? Were you like in shock? I was when I found out that Portland was being invaded by guys without uniforms and all that kind of good stuff, and they were taking prisoners off the street. I mean, this is America, isn't it? 2020?
Well, either we're finding out that America isn't the place we thought it was, or we're having a moment in history and time when we're in a great change. But although there had been demonstrations in Portland, I hadn't read about many physical confrontations with the police or robbery stuff. So I was in full shock. If it's going on for 5 or 6 weeks where they were having
unrest?
Yeah, I don't know if it's unrest or if it's just mostly young people protesting. And all of a sudden, these official thugs move in and start harassing everybody. The mayor of Portland was upset. She didn't have any control over the situation. The governor of Oregon was upset. Nobody told him this was happening. That's scary. That is really scary. Wow. And I was with some people and the other night, a couple of friends who came over for dinner, and we talked about it, and I said, you know what? I'm already thinking of where can I go if Trump gets reelected? You know, what country, what world? Because what he's doing to not even obeying the Supreme Court on some matters and so forth.
Okay. You know,
this is not the country I thought I was growing old in.
You know, I got a question for you. You served on some military bases that were named after some infamous characters in your time. Should military bases, why are we carrying Confederate names of people that tried to destroy the democracy? Why are we even heralding those people? Why are there still military bases named after these folks? I don't get it. Didn't you tell me you were at one of them?
Yeah, I was at what was then called Camp Gordon, Georgia, near Augusta. I didn't know who Gordon was. I wasn't curious enough to find out who Gordon was. But during recent times, as we've had some revelations about the past, I read that he was the head of he was an army general who was the head of the KKK in Georgia.
Wow,
what a guy to celebrate. But I didn't know about that, just as I didn't know about the riots in Wilmington, North Carolina, decades before I arrived there for a job, and just as I didn't know that Oklahoma had the Tulsa massacre,
yep.
That was hidden from school children and never put into school books and so on. So I guess if you go south, the history will be somewhere in the ground.
Good point. Godfather, say hello to the Godmama. Enjoy your Sunday. I love you. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you, Pedro.
The great Larry Merchant, exclusively appearing on Ring Talk Live Worldwide Sundays, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on Sports Byline, Sirius XM Satellite 211, of course, iHeartRadio. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
So I thank all of you who made this possible this evening, all of the effort that you made, and all of the people whose names I haven't mentioned, but who did all of the work at the precinct level, who got out the vote, who did all of the effort, brought forth all of the effort that's required. I was a campaign manager 8 years ago. I know what a difference that kind of an effort and that kind of commitment makes. So I thank all of you. Mayor Yorty has just sent me a message that we've been here too long already. So my thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there.
Talk about time tunnel, June 5th, 1968, Bobby Kennedy accepting the California primary victory in the Democratic run for nomination, of course, of the presidency. He would be shot like less than 10 minutes later, and of course, that would be the end of the Kennedy dynasty or the Kennedy era, per se. But the bottom line is, in hour number two, I was invited to do a 1,000th show of Black Op Radio, which is like the leading JFK show. They've been doing this like 20 years on the air. It comes to us from Vancouver, B.C. It's Thursday nights. It's hosted by Len Osanek, and Len's like a just really a nice guy. Anyway, we put together a show of his 1,000th show, like all these different guests he's had over the years, and I'm one of them. And it was an 11-minute piece, and we'll run that in hour number two. In fact, I've edited out one of the S-bombs that I put in there, but outside of that, it's going to be pretty good. And it's a little bit informative, so listen, and I think you'll learn something. You are tuned, I hope you will. Anyway, you're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look at the world of boxing and MMA. Of course, boxing coming alive, baby, and my man, I got a poster of him on the wall behind me, but you can't see it, of course, because we're watching the Ali Frazier 3 fight, the Thrill in Manila, live on Twitch.tv. I'm talking about the Sports Byline USA channel. But Tuesday, my man, Oscar Valdez, returning to action, of course, the 2012 Olympic gold medalist. Wasn't 2012 Olympic gold medalist? Yeah, 27-0, 21 KOs, of course. Bad dude, no doubt about it. Former WBO featherweight champion. Taking on Jason Velez. Velez comes in at 29-6 with a draw and I think 21 knockouts. So he's a decent fighter. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he can punch, but is he up to this kid's level? I mean, this kid, Oscar Valdez, looks like he might be the real deal. But I've always had problems with the guys that move up in weight without, like without declaring dominance. I mean, in other words, when I left 139 pounds to go to 147 pounds, which was unsuccessful, okay, when I moved up to welterweight, it was for a reason. In other words, I was trying to capture another title, another weight division. These guys are just capturing move. Plus, I was having problems with weight. But these guys are just moving up to move up because they don't want to settle the score at 126 or at 122. I mean, Emmanuel Navarrete, my best pound-for-pound boxer in all of Mexico, 37-1, 27 KOs. Of course, the guy that dogged Isaac Dogbo, not once but twice, of course, beat the snot out of him in December 2018. Everybody laughed at me when I said he would win that fight. Dogbo was at the WBO convention a couple of months earlier in Panama when we honored Roberto Duran that night. But I said to him, you know, the guy is here and he's fighting in 4 or 5 weeks. That just ain't cool. You don't do that, man. Forget the convention. You know what? Send him a Zoom or send him a Facebook or send him a FaceTime. But the bottom line is you needed to stay in camp. But Dogbo got lit up like the White House Christmas tree. So I guess if he really trained hard, it wouldn't have mattered anyway. But then, of course, they had the rematch. And Dogbo got dogged for like 11 and a half rounds, got stopped in the 12th round. That was in May of 2019. He hasn't fought since. Of course, he's going to come back pretty soon. But I got to tell you, when I look at what Emmanuel Navarrete has done at 122 pounds, it's phenomenal. But the fact that he wants to move up to 126 without taking care of business at 122, I got problems with that. I really got problems with that. Because I tell you, this is where great fighters are made. This is where great fighters are made. They're made in unification matches. When you get guys that are the two best at each weight, you don't have guys abandoning weights and going other places. It just doesn't work that way, okay? And Navarrete, as I said, that outstanding record, but there are other guys. There's Ray Vargas. Vargas is like 34 and zip. Comes to us from another Mexican fighter. Of course, Dogbo. Not a big Dogbo fan, but Dogbo's record now is 20-2. He's going to come back pretty soon. But when you go down the list, they don't even list Navarrete at 122 anymore. It's like 126. So I guess he's definitely moved up to 126 pounds, which means he was scared of Ray Vargas. Plain and simple, I don't care what you say, Mexican warrior or whatever he was, the heir apparent to Canelo, the best fighter in all of Mexico, just show me he has the intestinal fortitude and he has stones akin to a hamster. He just does. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff he could have done here at 122. There's decent fighters at 122 could have fought, but the real fight he should have fought was Ray Vargas. And I'm talking about R-E-Y, Ray Vargas. Ray can crack, no doubt about that. Ray can really, really crack. And, of course, the best fighter at 122 now is Ray Vargas, or was he before? And is that why Dogbo left? I mean, is that why Valenzuela left? Anyway, at the end of the day, I'm not too happy about that. But what can you do? You know, fighters are going to do what they want to do. And as far as being scared of people, people say, you know, he's not really scared of them. Then why did he move up? They could have made some big money at 122 in this unification match. They could have done it. I mean, nobody wants to watch fighters fight pedestrian fights. Felix Verdejo, the lightweight contender out of Puerto Rico, once considered the heir apparent to people like Wilfred Benitez and Felix Trinidad. He won on a first-round knockout the other night. Big deal. I mean, it was like, you know, and the guy was 15-0 coming in, but the guy couldn't lick a stamp if he wet his tongue. And then there was another first-round knockout on that one. In other words, they're throwing nothing but boxing exhibitions on television. And boxing exhibitions do nothing they do nothing for me. You're not going to get me to watch them. Once I realize, hey, you know, we're looking at a work fight, I don't watch work fights. There's no, unless I want to watch a fighter develop himself. In other words, if I got some young prospect that maybe is moving up the ladder, yeah, I'll watch him in a developmental fight. But I don't want to see ranked contenders in developmental fights. That's just the way it ain't going to go. So Tuesday night, Isaac Dogbo's going to be on that same card. Of course, I don't know what he wants to do as far as coming back is concerned, but I think he's sort of toast. But, you know, people say that he's only 20-2. He's only lost two fights, Pedro, but those two fights he lost, both to Navarrete, his last two fights, and he lost them going away. I mean, going away. But Isaac Dogbo, not a big deal. I love the name because you can dog him. I mean, easy to dog. He's taking on Chris Avalos. That's going to be on the same card, of course, Tuesday night in ESPN. They're calling this the bubble from the MGM Grand, of course, the studio where they're holding this, these boxing cards. Of course, it's been pretty successful thus far. Guys have not gotten sick. I think the studio fights are the future. In fact, the pound-for-pound king of pay-per-view, or the alleged pound-for-pound king of pay-per-view, I don't know if there is a king of pay-per-view anymore, but the guy that was making all the most money signed that $350 million contract. Canelo Alvarez says he's willing to fight for less money. My heart's broken. Yeah, instead of $35 million, he's probably going to fight for a little bit less. Of course, he's going to fight some guy named Jason Quigley. He's like, you know, got some mediocre record. So what am I going to try to tell you is he wants to mark time. He wants to fight a nobody. I just don't get why guys are fighting nobodies, because they don't get live gates. Oh, well, there's no live gate involved. So that means promoters got to take less and the fighters got to take a less. That's all. This isn't a good. This is simple numbers. This isn't like rocket science. Okay, if there's $10 on the table instead of $17 on the table, guess what? We're gonna have to work with that $10. That means that the promoter's gonna have to take less, the fighter's gonna have to take less, the TV network's gonna have to work things out, the hotels, if the hotel's paying a side fee, they're gonna have to work things out. Nobody's paying full dollar right now. Nobody's paying full dollar, and that's what I think a lot of fighters don't understand. I'm talking about Ryan Garcia, of course, the phenom, 21-0, out of Southern California. My guy, I mean, handsome, beautiful as far as his looks are concerned. Got a left hook that's like the best left hook I've seen in a long, long time. He just knocks people out with one shot. You saw in that last fight when he reduced that Nicaraguan to boxing rubble in one round. So he's an amazing fighter. But people say to me, you know, King Ryan Garcia. Well, you got Gervonta Davis at 135. You got Teofimo Lopez at 135, of course. And he's talking about fighting Vasyl Lomachenko. They were originally scheduled to go in July and May. And, of course, that fight got put off because of the coronavirus. Now they're talking about October. Now, listen, Hector Martinez has issued this challenge to me. And he doesn't give odds, which sort of ticks me off because, you know, he gets these prohibitive favorites and he doesn't want to give odds. But I am willing to bet him that Teofimo Lopez is going to beat Vasyl Lomachenko. Now, I haven't been wrong in a bet in a long, long time. And I've never been wrong on the air as far as, like, remember I used to use that bet where I said I'd eat an 8x10-inch piece of paper on the air if I was wrong? Well, I never, ever, ever, in 35, make that 36-plus years now, have ever had to eat that paper. I came close a couple of times. I remember I think that Jeannie, whatever her name was, when she called the Holyfield Riddick Bowe fight, or one of those fights, she called it a draw. She had a bad scorecard anyway. She saved me from eating an 8x10-inch piece of paper on the air because they called it a draw instead of the right fighter winning. But at the end of the day, I've never had to eat that 8x10-inch piece of paper. A couple of times it came real close, but in 36 years, I haven't had to eat the paper yet. So the UFC, we'll get to that after the break. Of course, UFC rocking and rolling from, of all places, Dubai. And if you ever want to go someplace in the world, don't go to Dubai. I've been to 34 countries. It was a piss hole. I wouldn't want to go back there for nothing. All you do is sweat. They got nothing but women on the street. It's like this. The women in Dubai are two ways. Either they wear the burqas and they're, you know, from there, or they're hookers. That's it. There's no in-between. Take them back, there is an in-between. The hotel employees, the Filipinos. But outside of that, it's hookers and burqas. That's all you see in Dubai. As far as the burqas are concerned in Dubai, the Foxy girls got Victoria's Secret's burqas. I kid you not. They're like sexy burqas. But the rest of them just got those masks on. Of course, masks now universal here in the United States. And masks aren't a bad thing for a lot of people, believe me. And I'm not just talking health-wise. I'm talking cosmetically. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing and MMA. Open phone lines around the planet as we bring in, of course, the trumpet of Mr. Greg Adams in Tower of Power in 1972. You are still a young man. Man, seems like yesterday, doesn't it? Tower of Power, rocking and rolling, got a couple of new albums out in the last couple of years. You can check out all the work from Emilio Castillo and his gang at towerofpower.com. Check them out, towerofpower.com. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. Hour number two, we're going to touch on a whole lot of subjects. Of course, this is a two-hour show today. This is 11 a.m. Pacific time for 2 hours live on the Sports Byline Radio Network, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio 211, and of course, iHeartRadio. Straight up, this is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, coming to you from iTunes and, of course, the Anchor Podcast.
Decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right. The World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
And all these fighters that are, you know, they share in the revenue. They do share in the revenue. They have they have the upside in the pay-per-view, you know? Wild it up.
Wild it up. You don't believe that, do you? All the fighters share in the revenue. Jorge Masvidal, of course, got $500,000 for selling out Madison Square Garden. That was a $7 million gate. He got $500,000 for that. And, of course, the money he got on pay-per-view, he didn't get any of that. Of course, that's when he beat Nate Diaz. A fortnight ago, of course, he took on Kamaru Usman at the last minute for the World Welterweight Championship, released the UFC Welterweight 170-pound championship. Usman, a once-beaten fighter coming in, excellent fighter, stand-up, but a great, great wrestler, a college wrestler with a pedigree, no doubt about that. But he and Masvidal would go five rounds because, you know, Masvidal probably came in a little bit unprepared. I mean, he signed for the fight like 6 days before. He was 193 pounds. They showed a picture of him on a scale somewhere at 193 pounds, and somehow he made 170 pounds. Yikes. 170 pounds. Yikes. 6 days later. How do you lose 23 pounds and then go on to fight five rounds? Oh, God, five-minute rounds. So hats off to Jorge Masvidal. I mean, he's got intestinal fortitude like nobody can doubt. Now 35 and 13, who came in at 35 and 12. Not the greatest record, but I told you how he made his bones. He made his bones in the backyard with Kimbo Slice down there in Florida, learning how to fight in backyards on YouTube. I mean, that's where he broke his bones. So this has all sort of been on the job training per se, as he's moved up in class and beaten fighters that people think he shouldn't have beat. Of course, he and Usman was probably going to beat him. I mean, maybe with a full camp, he was going to beat him. But on short notice, there was no doubt about it, Usman was going to beat him. As far as the UFC schedule is concerned, it sort of sucks. It just does. If you're a fight fan, I guess, and you've got ESPN, you've got another fight card coming up on the 26th. Darren Till is going to be on that card. Then you've got a fight card coming to you from Las Vegas on the 1st. Of course, that's from the UFC Apex. They call it the Apex Center. In the main event, Holly Holm, the former world bantamweight champion, the girl that lick Ronda Rousey pretty easily. And, of course, Ronda didn't wait. She didn't stick around for the rematch. She took that fight with Miesha Tate instead because she was talking smack, and her and her manager thought they were going to out-negotiate and out-talk Dana White and that kind of stuff. That time, Dana won. Anyway, Holly Holm got beat by Miesha Tate, and, of course, Miesha Tate got beat by Amanda Nunes. Amanda Nunes ended up destroying Ronda Rousey, and, of course, Ronda Rousey retired, went off to the world of wrestling entertainment. Now she's done with that, and she's burning kayfabe up all over the internet with her little Facebook post and this and that, talking about fake fights and this kind of stuff. You know, listen, babe, you enjoyed the money. You know, you enjoyed the money. You made a good amount of money doing that, more money than any of the girls that were making you look good, because that's what professional wrestling's about. It's not like who can wrestle and who can't. It's who can make you look good. In other words, when you get in there, Ronda had no real experience wrestling, okay, as far as professional wrestling is concerned. The other girls make you look good. I mean, how can I put it to you? It takes two people to dance. It's sort of like a dance. If you don't have a perfect dance partner, you're in trouble. So Holly Holm, former world boxing champion. In fact, I got a picture of me up on my Facebook page, Pedro Pete Fernandez. And, of course, that's Ring Talk as well. And of me doing a Holly Holm fight, I was at the Aleta Casino, I think, in Albuquerque, New Mexico, back in the day when she was the women's world boxing champion. That was long before she delved into the world of MMA. Of course, her world was all about Ronda Rousey. I mean, Holly Holm trained to beat Ronda Rousey. After that, she just sort of like fell apart. She lost a lot of fights. And, I mean, she's trying to come back. I think she's got one big win now. behind her, or one or two wins behind her, but straight up, I think Holly should give it up. She's 37 years old. I mean, you're a woman taking punches at 37 years old, man. Give it up. Heavyweight Championship of the World going down August the 15th. Am I excited? No, but Daniel Cormier is excited, of course, going to challenge for the championship against Stipe Miocic, the man that took the championship from him, that he took the championship from originally. Of course, this is their third fight. Is it a third fight like Ali Frazier? Like, man, no. This is going to be a third fight sort of like Duran and Leonard. Duran and Leonard really sucked. That third fight was really, really bad. Of course, December 7th, 1989. 39 degrees outdoors in Las Vegas. The Mirage Hotel sold it out. Of course, that was the grand opening of the Mirage Hotel. So they decided they were going to put it outdoors. So somehow they got 15,000 people, and I was one of them, to stand out. They gave me a press pass, so I didn't have to buy a ticket. But I was one of those people that stood outside. I couldn't believe how cold it was. I was freezing. 39 degrees. Imagine the guys in the ring. 39 degrees. I fought, I think it was 40 or 41 degrees in the Concord Pavilion one night when they put me out there in the main event. In 84 when I fought Crabtree in the 84 Golden Glove Championships. But I think it was like 40, 41 degrees out there. So I know what fighting in the cold is. But fighting for a long time in the cold, like Roberto and Ray that night. Well, Ray was slick. Ray had a blanket in his corner. Roberto just sat there. It wasn't one of Roberto's greatest nights. There's no doubt about that. Of course, that was just 10 months after he put together that fantastic win against Iran Barkley. But you know, like Larry Merchant said about Roberto Duran, he has problems putting together two good fights in a row. He just can't do it. You know why? Because discipline, lack of discipline, no doubt about that. Stipe Miocic and Cormier, of course, going the third time for the World Heavyweight Championship, also on the card. And they've got to do this because I guess they're hurting Junior Dos Santos. Of course, the guy that's going to be like selling crayons pretty soon, if he can sell crayons, he knows what the different colors are. Because I'm telling you, this guy's just taking too much punishment. He took an ass whooping from Cain Velasquez, one or two of them. But the second one, I think was, the second one, it was just so brutal. He knocked Cain out the first time. But the second one was so brutal, I never want to see a guy ever fight again. And of course, but he's fighting a guy that's basically a mark. You guys know what a mark is? A mark is a guy that's sort of that's suspected of taking a dive. I'm talking about Jezero Runzinek. Remember him? He was going to fight. He fought Francis Ngannou a couple of months ago. And I said, listen, this guy's going to, he's a stand-up kickboxer. He should go in like less than 50 seconds. I think he went in like 25 seconds. So they're bringing him back. After you get knocked out by, you know, the biggest puncher in the heavyweight division in the UFC, they bring you back because they want you to shine against Junior Dos Santos. That's Dana White's matchmaking. They're trying to run Dana one more time, trying to run Junior Dos Santos one more time for the title. Also on the card, a colorful guy, a bit of a weird dude. Yeah, he's a weird dude. Sean O'Malley. I've had him on the show in the past. I've had a couple of clips from him, and he's really a weird dude. He's got tattoos on his face. And not to say that the tattoos on your face aren't cool, but some people, to me, it's a little weird. Anyway, he's taking on Marion Vera. That's going to be a 135-pound fight. He says he's ready for a title shot. We'll see what's happening as far as that's concerned. The world of the UFC continues to rock on. Of course, they got dates all the way through October 24, 2020. They really don't have sites for all these dates except for Las Vegas. They're trying to think that Las Vegas is going to come back. They hope that Las Vegas will open up the casinos as far as the arenas are concerned. And if you have social distancing and you have a 20,000 seat arena and you only put 25% of the people in there, what are you going to make tickets $1,000 instead of $100 ticket? A ticket's $1,000 or something like that? I just don't know if it's feasible. Again, you've got to go back to the economics of this, and guys have got to take less money all around. Now, Dana White's been getting guys to take less money for a long time. I'm not, when I say guys need to take less money, everybody but guys in the UFC. Guys in the UFC and the women in the UFC need to get paid more. I mean, if you go and have a fight of the night and score like the sensational knockout, this and then Uncle Danny gives you $50,000. Oh boy, an extra $50,000. Come on, man. You're talking about a multi-million. The reason why the UFC is putting these fights on ESPN is that they're getting paid to do it. In other words, they don't have to make money anymore. The money's there. The contract's there. Dana's bringing in all this money, of course. $4.2 billion that sold this company for. That's $4,200 million. Where's the money going to the fighters? It's not. Jorge Masvidal, of course, Dana having the cop after this past pay-per-view. They admit that he was probably responsible for, get this, 400,000 to 500,000 pay-per-view buys. They say the total event did less than a million. Around the world, it's something like 1.3 million in pay-per-view buys, but around a million buys here in the United States, and $500,000 was attributed to the madman himself, Jorge Masvidal. So more power to him on that. As far as the UFC rocking and rolling with entertainment, I watched parts of last night's card, and it was a decent card, I guess, if you're an MMA guy. But I just didn't. I don't know, man. I mean, you almost need Viagra now to watch some of these UFC cards. And I don't mean to say that. I'm not trying to knock the fighters or anything like that. It's just that they're just. You got to have some names here. Like last night, the name on the card, Joseph Benavidez, of course, he was the former flyweight contender from Team Alpha Male in Sacramento, California. He and Uriah Faber were teammates. Of course, he lost in a rear naked choke in the first round to Davidson Figueroa. More power to Mr. Figueroa. More power to him there. Of course, that was the first round, 4:48 in. Jack Hermanson beat Kelvin Gastelum. That was a submission as well, a heel hook. That was in the first round, 1:16 in. Gastelum was just fading. Didn't he have a title shot that was canceled? And once that title shot got canceled, the guy got sick or something like that. He sort of never got on the good foot after that. But Kelvin Gastelum probably thinking about getting a day job, I think. Sorry, man. I just got to tell you. Because, you know, if you take the, listen, if you ever worked in a store, you have a cash register, like a 7-Eleven store or a donut shop or a candy store. So when you come in the morning, you start putting cash in the register. And if you sell enough donuts, you're going to have enough cash to the point where you can't put any more cash in the drawer. It won't close because there's too much cash. So you have to, that's what happens to fighters. They can take it. And then there comes a point in time in their life where they can't take it anymore. And of course, we're talking about, man, think about that Jose Aldo. I mean, Scarface, two and four in his last six fights, lost that fight to Peter Yar last week, stopped in the third round, of course, a battle for the UFC Bantamweight Championship. And the fact that the UFC can call these titles their own, you know, it's not an MMA championship. There is no MMA world champion. Somebody said to me the other day, is there a world championship in MMA? Not really, because the UFC is all like, it's like they control everything. They control the belts. They control what you wear. They control the, I mean, you know, they did a new rebuy. They did a new deal. Remember they had that advertising deal where each fighter can go in wearing his own trunks, and on the back of his trunks will say Scott Cuddy Bail Bonds. You know, something like that, right? Or Pedro Fernandez haircuts or something like that. It would say that on the back of the guy's trunks or in his corner man on the back of their glass, back of their jackets and this and that. Some of those guys, like Brendan Schaub, the stand-up comedian. Now, what a great guy he is, a former heavyweight UFC fighter. But he was getting like $80,000 to $90,000 a fight for his advertising. So then the UFC said, no. You got to wear Reebok. Well, how much was Reebok giving him? $5,000. $10,000. That's what these guys were getting out of the sponsors. So they went from 100 grand to 10 grand. UFC just taking more of the money. And I explained this to you before, that the UFC, the entire dollar, if you were to look at a UFC dollar, only 8 to 12 cents. Now Dana's willing to say 18 cents goes to the fighters. Only one-fifth goes to the fighters. These guys going out there and involved in death matches week after week. You got to be kidding me. This is not a regular sparring session. Things happen. In other words, I watch these guys in training, and people say to me, they must train like animals. Well, they don't train nearly as hard as they fight, or they'd be dead men, okay? But the residual effects of one ass whipping is just incredible in the manner in which they take place. And speaking of ass whippings, you know, you look at the Dana White's cards that he's putting on here in Dubai. If you go through the entire card, anybody without a bio on Wikipedia lost. With the exception of Amir Abazi, he fought a guy by the name of Malcolm Gordon, and both those guys didn't have Wikipedia bios. But Amir won. But outside of that, everybody that Dana brings in, Carlos Felipe, I keep going and going, but Luana Carlina, he brings in all these stiffs. They're stiffs. They're MMA marks. They're stiffs. In other words, what he accused boxing of, he's doing. He's doing it. He's bringing in stiffs. I mean, you know, if you're the biggest MMA company in the entire world and you got billions of dollars to throw around this and that, why are you bringing in stiffs? Why are we watching stiffs? Dana, I'm not a big fan of yours. I think you know that. Straight up, you're a pimp. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Mr. Dana White, wherever you are, I have a hit list. But I want to start getting paid. I want to start making heavyweight money.
Straight Up, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing and MMA. If you're watching the Twitch.tv broadcast right now, of course, we're coming to you from Manila. In other words, not really, but we're watching the Manila fight, the thrill of Manila, the third fight between Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier, of course, 1975. Both guys were absolutely past their peak. They were both so shot. It was unbelievable. Like bullet holes in both guys going in. But, you know, when two old guys get together, they put together a decent fight because they're putting together, you know, they both have diminished skills. When you have diminished skills, you have to stand in one spot and fight. And they did a lot of phone booth fighting in that one, no doubt about that. Henry Cejudo, you heard him before the break, of course. He said he has just given up the UFC flyweight championship. Of course, that Deiveson Figueroa grabbed that title last night. He gave up that title. He gave up the 135-pound title. But what I think is happening here, and if he's a smart dude, he's probably learning from the Hector Camacho school of boxing. And why do I say that? Because back in the 1980s, Hector Camacho was a WBC 130-pound champion, and Don King had a slave contract with him. Don King, slave contract? Not really, no. Come on, it's not possible, Pedro. Anyway, so that's what Hector tells me, that Don King's had a slave contract with him. As long as he's WBC champion, Don King owns Hector, okay? So Hector says, okay, I'll give up the championship. So he gives up the championship, and Don King scratches his head. Well, how the hell did I lose my most popular
fighter?
Well,
you have to talk to my lawyer on that one.
Yeah, anyway, Don, but the bottom line is your lawyer got lit up on that one. Camacho won that one, of course. At the end of the day, I think that's what Henry Cejudo is trying to do, giving up the 135-pound championship and the 125-pound championship. He gives up both his titles. Maybe he's no longer indebted via contract to the UFC. And, of course, the UFC is concerned. What can I tell you? They put pimps in San Francisco. They make those guys seem generous. They just do. When you're giving somebody, I mean, if you had, I mean, if any employee, if you think about this, folks, any employee that you got, if you were to give them 8 cents on a dollar, 8 to 12 cents on a dollar, you'd know you'd be underpaying them, wouldn't you? No doubt about that. This is Ring Talk, live worldwide. Hour number one of two today, live on Sports Byline at iHeartRadio, of course, Sirius XM Satellite, channel 211. Couple things. What was the best swimming pool I ever swam at? I didn't swim at the pool. I think I told the story before. But I was at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, Nevada in 1995, I believe. And I was married. No, 87. And I was married. And I'm having a problem with the ex-wife, ringside. She was the ex-wife now, but she was acting ex-wife then, right? So David Copperfield comes by, the magician. I go, Mr. Copperfield, can you do one thing for me? He goes, what's that, sir? I go, can you make her disappear? Stay tuned for hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide.